serve as the HRSA government task lead on a congressionally mandated report called the High Tech Report, Understanding the Impact of Health IT in Underserved Communities and Those with Health Disparities. Just to get a sense of the room, this report officially came out in May. Has anyone heard about the report? Miguel, you know everything. You don't count. Well, I'm glad that I'm here. What I'm focusing on is on the 9 case studies. And how many people have heard about the electronic health records meaningful use? Okay, wonderful. So many more hands. Thank you for that. So as you know, billions of dollars have been given to HHS and Centers for Medicaid Services and Office of National Coordinator to support our physicians to have an electronic health record. And what this part of the law created and asked for HHS is to look at those funds that are being allocated and how are we using those resources specifically to eliminate racial and ethnic health disparities. One of the things that I neglected to say as I was moderator, I also had the wonderful privilege of working under Dr. Garth Graham for 5.5 years in the Office of Minority Health at a critical time when the Office of National Coordinator was getting created. So I had an opportunity to staff him and work on a lot of different issues with the Office of National Coordinator. So I bring a lot of history with that work in the office there. So I do not have any conflicts of interest or nor any financial disclosures to share with anyone. I do want to acknowledge Matt Swain, who is the project officer from the Office of the National Coordinator for 2.5 years. We worked very closely together. And then our colleague Emily Jones, who is a public health analyst at HRSA, the agency where I work at, then moved over to ONC. And so she was great because at the last few months, after so much work, she gave critical review of the report. And then our contractor, Otto Mudin, who is vice president of NORC. And, of course, all the participants who gave their time, agreed to speak to us, all 9 case participants. We had a very long list of folks we wanted to talk to. Some of them declined, some of them didn't have time, and some did not want to share their information, which is, of course, okay. And also, because of HHS guidelines, we were not allowed to do more than 9 case studies. So the learning objectives, what I hope to do, and if you go on the HRSA, Office of Health Information Technology and Quality website, you'll see links to the full report, the literature review, and each of the 9 case studies. I think what Miguel was pointing out about having digestible, small, or bullet points and key information, what we try to do for the 9 specific case studies that are broken by different population groups and different types of media, we made them individual, short 5 pages with big bullets. These are the lessons learned, this is the technology used, so that folks can use those case studies as reference or help them as they're developing their own programs. So my goal today is to share a little bit of those 9 case studies with you to highlight the innovative grassroots community-based programs using HIT that address the needs of our underserved communities with documented disparities in access, quality of care, and the outcomes. I also will be sharing how we came together to do the literature review that was completed before actually doing the full report and how we chose those 9 case studies, which again was very difficult. So this is just some language from the High Tech. The High Tech legislation got passed in February 17, 2009, and it really, again, asked HHS to look at how we're using technology to improve healthcare quality, efficiency of care, address health disparities, and support the delivery of patient-centered medical care. So these are the 9 case studies. I won't read them, but again, we have short, easy to use, easy to read. One of the things we have not done, and hearing Miguel speak and thinking about video and the visuals, they're easy to read reports, but one of the things we had talked about, and it's reminding me of some of my to-do list, doing short clips, short video clips, from hearing from the actual participants in the case studies, as opposed to, you know, hearing me talk about the big report, but actually when we hear it from the direct folks, sharing their lessons learned and also their challenges. So you're reminding me as I'm here, I still have more work to do myself. So again, the first one really actually had a focus on the Asian population and how they were using health IT to ensure their patients were receiving just health, not more than just health care. I'm going to focus on two in more detail, but you can see telepsychiatry, the Georgia high tech, using telehealth to improve chronic disease management. And one of them also had a focus on young adolescents who were homeless and how they helped to design their own personal health record online so that they didn't have to have a laptop. They can go somewhere, go online and actually access their information. So again, each of these has a unique story and how they use the technology to help improve healthcare. And they also showed some results on how they actually improve either increasing access to the care or some other health outcomes measures. So one of the ones that I was particularly interested in is how we use telepsychiatry for the treatment of depression in underserved Hispanics. I think we all are beginning to see, with all the news, the need, growing need for mental health workforce, and specifically, you know, for those vulnerable populations, perhaps, who language is not English also, and how challenging that is to build that mental health workforce, but also have people who are trained in either Spanish or different Asian languages. So this one really used technology trying to test the feasibility and the acceptability of telepsychiatry for low-income Hispanic patients with major depression. You can see it was a small group, 167, and it was associated with a community health center, a lookalike, and in Arizona. And what we found out was that the patients that used the telepsychiatry were just as likely to keep their appointments as opposed to coming to the on-site visit. So it was great because they didn't have to come on-site. They could use it from their home, and they also the equipment was provided to them. So one of the things for conclusions was that the results show that for low-income depressed Hispanic patients, telepsychiatric service for depression is acceptable, although its feasibility is still questionable. The benefits of telemedicine were discussed in terms of improving patient care and in ways other than directly providing service to the patients. The one thing I do want to share with this this specific case study, we did notice, and it's not in the bullets here, gender differences. There were more women who came than men, so there's still a challenge of the men coming to seek out care, even when it was, you know, through the use of technology. And some of the, with, this was a qualitative study, so with the questions with the staff and the psychiatrist, some of the things that they thought was perhaps that, you know, the reason they didn't come on site because they had hourly jobs and it was really difficult for them to leave their work. So we thought, you know, the fact that it would be using the technology at home, it would increase, but they still did not participate as much as the women did. So we still have a huge barrier. And so additional questions that even with the use of technology, men were not participating at the rates that women were. So I just wanted to describe a little bit of what the technology was used. It was a commercial webcam and the computers, the Adobe Macromedia and Breeze software. So the big takeaways from this specific case study was that culturally and linguistically congruent liaisons can also facilitate acceptance of health information technology. So with this case study specifically, there was a woman, like a promotora, who knew the patients really well, and so she had that comfort level, just like how Miguel, you know, got out there in the audience and was talking, and she just enthused that that energy and also that confidence and trust. And so she was able, because some folks were a little uncomfortable being in front of a camera and, you know, and talking to a computer. So because of her and her relationship with them, then people participated. So, again, you need someone to be that bridge person to connect them to the tools of technology. So this was successful because they had that staff person. Telepsychiatry can be embraced and accepted by patients who are limited technology users. Telepsychiatry improves access to mental health services and it can improve the quality of care. And the last takeaway we learned from this case study was integrating IT into a broader system of clinic and provider function provides essential support for both buy-in and the sustainability. Another one of the case studies was with a federally qualified health center, and it was the Columbia Basin Health Association. And they had they had been invested in HIT a few years already. They already had a well-established electronic health record. It was bi-directional interface with both the state immunization registry. They also had an electronic dental record. So this is one of the folks, federal health center, who had already funding from HRSA and other agencies that had already built their infrastructure with their EHR and EDR. They also hired a Wired M education material and videos in their system, and they were also starting to use a mobile ultrasound device. But so this is one of the, and the population there were primarily Spanish-speaking population. 78% of the patients there were identified as Hispanic, and half of the patients were either migrant or seasonal farm workers. So with each of these case studies, we try to identify different population groups and try to use different technology so we could see how they were utilizing and where they were having challenges and where they were having successes. So some key takeaways from this specific case study is that multimedia strategies using new mobile tools or educational videos integrated with the EHR can overcome patient literacy and language barriers. Strong leadership and committed staff are important to sustaining a health IT program. So I was sharing with this specifically federally qualified health center, because of their leadership, they have been investing the last 3 years, and I'm sure many of you are also strong leaders for your projects using HIT, so that is something that we see that we need the staff person working on, but it's critical to also have top senior leadership support. Another takeaway, key takeaway, is the innovative customization of systems to meet the unique needs of our providers who care for the underserved encourages the buy-in. So what Miguel was also talking about, listening to your consumers, you know, listening to the users and really tailoring it to the providers and also the patients so that they can feel comfortable and use it and not ignore it. Quality reporting directed at providers can lead to improved patient outcomes, and also the data integration with internal external sources improves efficiencies. So the procedure of how we went about the literature review, and again, I'm very happy that this report came out. It took some time. I'm glad I'm here because it seemed like not many folks are using, but I think it's important for us to also document. I think I heard both of you also talk about, you know, the importance of documentation. So I think that's what we're trying to do with this report, is to show specific where things have worked. And so what we did before we even started with this report 3 years ago is we did an environmental scan to see what has been published on health information technology and health disparities. And we recognized there was very little published. So again, NORC was our contractor. We had a wonderful team there, and they did all the searching of the commonly used databases, including PubMed and Google Scholar for keywords related to health IT, the underserved, and health disparities. I encourage you to go either on the HRSA, Office of Health Information Technology and Quality website, or the ONC, and actually download the report too, so you can see some of the references that are there. They also did searches, included the use of health IT in applications, EHRs, e-prescribing, and PHRs in combinations. So this is how we were trying to find what was published. So I'm trying to be transparent in terms of what we used. So the search yielded over 1,000 individual comments that addressed key research topics. But not all of them were specific for racial ethnic disparities, but you can see that report, the literature review, online. So I definitely recognize there are limitations because we only have 9 case studies. This report does not represent generalizable findings or ones that permit meaningful statistical inferences. The case studies do not represent all the geographic areas of the United States, and also because the case study selection criterion was focused on community-based projects that readers had not previously studied in depth, the team did not visit the most high-profile cases of success with respect to health IT and health disparities. you know, one of the ones that was on our list originally was Text for Baby, as they also have the Spanish language component, and it was a project that I was working on when I was at the Office of Minority Health. But that program had gotten so much visibility, we were truly trying to identify those who had not received as much attention so that we can bring other programs to highlight. So it's a little bit about the case study selection. So the candidates were identified based on information collected through the environmental scan, as well as suggestions for our technical expert panel. So in the beginning, we also realized that we do have people who have been doing this type of research for some time as well, and program and design of implementation. And so we brought those 17 technical experts, and they're all listed in the report too. And so we had three different meetings with them, and they provided input as we were identifying the criteria for the case studies, as we were writing the environmental scan, and they also were a tremendous resource. Some of their publications we were able to pull in and learn from. So this was, you know, a government and academic community health centers, very much a partnership. That's what I'm trying to say. So that's what the technical expert panel really contributed. And of course, my colleague Matsui and ONC and myself at HRSA. Case studies were prioritized to include a goal that was explicitly related to health disparities, targeted specific populations of interest, and gathered some evidence of outcomes associated with that intervention. Efforts were also made to include a variety of health IT implications, both from the provider and the patient facing, to include different types of different racial ethnic population groups, and also locations and settings. And lastly, the team sought the cases were, again, not already captured in existing literature. So in closing, I want to, what did all this research and what all these findings and case studies imply for policy implications? So overall, these findings suggest the importance of continued investments in technical assistance and resources that specifically target the safety net providers and the underserved communities. So thank you for your time, and I think we can entertain questions now for all three presenters. Thank you. Gracias.
Can you go back to your first slide, which really described the development of the new process?
Oh, the learning objective?
Okay. Next one.
I tell you. Which
this one?
Okay. Which one?
This one.
Okay.
And just, could you reinforce? Mm-hmm. This is so amazing. Mm-hmm. The government actually did this. Could you? Mm-hmm. Would you mind just repeating what that is?
So, well, let me see how many people. How many people have heard of high-tech legislation? Okay. So we've got a couple of hands. So, right now I'm in the Office of Legislation at HRSA. So in 2009, I was not in that office, but in 2009, this bill got passed, and it was, and I have another PowerPoint that actually gives you the exact language, and I can share that with anyone. So it did ask HHS, and specifically the Office of the National Coordinator, again, because of all these billions of dollars that have been awarded to the department, of how we're using our high-tech funding to eliminate health disparities. And specifically, as it reads here, how we're improving the quality, not just implementing technology, but how we're using that technology to increase access, to improve the quality of care, and also the efficiency of care, reducing costs and addressing the health disparities, and supporting the delivery of the patient-centered medical home. So again, this is from, you know, the legislators, from the leadership on the Hill, really seeing that we need to move towards technology, the EHRs and mHealth, but how we're using all this funding to really find solutions for racial and ethnic health disparities. But let me invite the two other speakers to the front, too, so the audience can ask questions of all three great presentations.
Or you can other questions? Afterwards.
Go ahead, please. And identify yourself, please.
Sure, I'm Michelle Lindsay. I'm the Minority Health Resource.
Oh, very good, good.
Definitely.
Okay.
We're using you as. For your point, it's something that we'd like to redesign our website and move more toward that. We've been focusing a lot this past year on social media. And so the question is, how are you using social media to reinforce your website, and how are you integrating it?
Terrific. And since the AIDS.gov communication director is sitting in the back row, I'll actually, I can know the answer, but I want people to know. Aisha Moore.
Yeah, so sort of what we do is, like you just said, to reinforce. So every time we post a blog, you know, there are 30,000 people subscribed to our blog, but that doesn't mean they're going to open that email. So we push it out on social media, push it, Facebook and Twitter. So pretty much every time we have something new, because before, you know, on old websites, you used to put like a little flashy new thing. Like, that's just not how it works anymore. So, you know, it's like always where the people are. So we make sure we put our new infographics on Pinterest, new blogs on social media. We try to, we're doing our 58 campaign right now, so we try to make sure those photos not only live in our gallery, but live on social media. So it's sort of like just another place to put all the work that we do, because as you know, like, usually things are in reports that sit on shelves, nobody ever reads them. So we're trying to give, we kind of like get that stuff off the shelf and out to people. So we're just taking the stuff that we already spent so much time getting cleared and all that stuff, and just like repurposing it in small bites on social media.
And for us, what was so important, just like on Monday, Tuesday, we did a blog post letting folks know, just reminding people December 1st is World AIDS Day, and a senior government official wrote a blog post about how important it is. But what we also did, because some people won't read that blog post, is he then read the blog post into a microphone. And suddenly we had a podcast, and an audio file that we could be put on our Facebook page. Also, you know, just the fact that we made sure that, you know, we always tweet about our other products. Again, allowing people to link wherever they are. You had a second question, I think. I don't know.
Were you reading my mind? I want to follow up with Pinterest, because we have not gone there yet. We haven't asked for the insurance yet. But my question is, how, are you liking it? Do you feel like you're getting a lot of response from that? Mm-hmm. Still feeling like that's new territory.
Yeah, and it's definitely still new territory for us. So
can you tell people what Pinterest is?
Yeah, so Pinterest is like the online pin board. You know, you can have in front of your desk for your inspiration or your telephone list or whatever. But and it's very, very digital medium. But the key with Pinterest is when you put the image up there, it links back to the original content on the web. So it takes us a while to get on Pinterest, because everyone's like, oh, let's get on Pinterest. And I'm like, well, like, Black gay men aren't Pinterest. So the way to think about it, though, is if women are on Pinterest, women might be the caregivers. Those Black gay men, young Black gay men might be that person's child. Mm. So that's kind of the way we saw the women as a conduit information. And it's like in your study, you talked about how men didn't use the technology. It was the women, because women tend to be the caregivers, tend to think about health. So that's kind of our rationale for using Pinterest, because women tend to be in healthcare. So even though the, you know, mostly older white women who are on Pinterest, we still thought they can be a conduit as far as being caregivers and possibly being mothers, aunts, and that kind of thing. So that's how. So right now, for our facing age, we're putting a picture every day on social media, but we're putting different pictures on Pinterest because we're trying to make sure that there are pictures of maybe pregnant women or moms with their kids, that kind of thing, to go with that.
I actually had a question for you, Dr. Gabru. You talked about the challenges of, you know, cost savings and its long term, but it sounded like you were collecting some data about cost savings. I wonder if you would talk a little bit more about that, because, you know, one of the challenges here in the U.S. too is that the EHRs are supposed to reduce duplication and save us money, but we have not seen yet publications to show that yet. So I wondered, and you mentioned that it's going to be long term, but I wonder if you could talk a little bit more how you're thinking about that, to give us ideas.
Yeah, sure. In South Africa, we didn't do cost effectiveness assessment, but we did in other countries, for example, in Uganda and in Mozambique. So we did total cost of ownership, also a comparison between paper-based approaches. This was especially for data collection, paper-based approaches and electronic data collection systems. So in Uganda, we found about 24% savings compared to paper-based approaches. That is over the entire lifespan of the system. In Mozambique, we found about 20%. So it's pretty close what we found in Uganda and in Mozambique. But it's not an easy feat to do a cost-effectiveness assessment. And we also had some, you know, a lot of questions coming from several economists about the validity of it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other questions? Yes, go ahead, Smith.
Question for Mr. You said we were using, you know, this mobile system in Eastern Cape. Where?
In Eastern Cape, we did it in Port Elizabeth. In Port Elizabeth, we did it in both urban and rural. So in, I'm sorry?
I said I can't hear what you're saying.
We did it in both urban and rural settings. Examples of the urban settings, we did it in as a Port Elizabeth Hospital Complex, which includes Livingston Hospital, Dora Ginza and Provincial. And in East London complex, in Mtata, there is also a academic complex there affiliated with Walter Sisulu University. And we did it in several primary care health facilities in rural areas.
Is the Supreme Nurses and the doctors who said they got 100% accuracy in diagnosis, where were they? Where were they from? From urban areas or
the rural? They're a combination. The nurses, for example, we have 50 nurses at the Port Elizabeth Hospital Complex, which, as you probably know, Livingston, Dora Ginza, and Provincial are there. There are 50 nurses from urban. And we have 62 or 63 nurses from rural. So they come from both urban and rural.
The reason I'm so interested in this is that I come from the Eastern Cape, from the rural. Not even from each other, but from areas like Mount Fletcher, Matatia, and where the health services are quite sparse and rural. Did you ever go there? Because there's only one hospital in Mount Fletcher, the Bishop Hospital. You know, that doesn't have, you know, as many quite good services, you know, per se. Did you go to such areas and just ended around?
No. We did, I mean, Port St. John's, for example, yeah. In Confibaba, All Saints, in that area. Uh-huh. So we have gone deep to the rural areas.
Okay. You didn't go near Madatia, which is near on the border of Natal?
I can't recall all the names of the health facilities. But we really went deep to the rural settings, as I said, for example, Kofimvaba, in that environment, in that area.
What is the success of the use of Smoga with those rural areas? Do you have good success?
It was quite successful, and we will be releasing the report very soon, okay. The entire report, so I would be happy to provide you the full report. Yeah.
Actually, I invite you to also post it, the link to the full report on the, you know, APHA Health Informatics Information Technology Facebook account, so other people can also share it. I'm trying to share the report that we spent, you know, 3 years working on. With as many people, because, right, it's so frustrating. I don't want it to be one of those reports that sits on the shelf, so we want people to use the findings and continue to share the lessons learned. Other questions from anyone else? Okay. Please help me thank our speakers.